Hello, kings and queens of the ring. Welcome back to another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. I am your hostess, Pollo Del Mar, the most wrestling-obsessed drag personality in existence. And you are tuning in to episode 11 of Arm Drag Takedown, where we will be joined later in this episode by the newly crowned NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Nick Aldis. Nick defeated Tim Storm at the December 9th CZW show to become the new NWA Heavyweight Champion. And not only did we see the crowning of a new world champion that night, we saw the debut of one of my favorite professional wrestling personalities of all time as Nick's new manager. That's right, he was led to the ring in CZW by the international heartthrob himself, Austin Idol. Austin hosts an extremely popular podcast all his own, where a number of months back, I was granted the great, great honor of being a guest. And Austin, of course, led Nick Aldis to his first NWA Heavyweight Championship, allowing him to join the extensive line of legends who have held that title, which extends all the way back to as early as 1905. Now, more recently, the National Wrestling Alliance has been purchased by rock star and wrestling guru Billy Corgan, best known as the lead for the Smashing Pumpkins, and it has been relaunched with Billy and Dave Lagana, a former employee of World Wrestling Entertainment, at the helm, and they have taken a grassroots effort to reinvigorating the NWA legacy, legend, and history through their popular YouTube series, 10 Pounds of Gold, which we will talk to Nick about later in this episode. To skip directly to the Nick Aldis interview, just fast forward to the 25-minute mark. Plus, I'll give my Arm Drag Takedown recap of the events of the recent WWE Clash of Champions SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view, highlights of last week's Impact Wrestling, and the announcement of the upcoming Women's Royal Rumble in WWE. All of that and much, much more on this episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. To never miss an exciting celebrity-packed episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar, or to find our exclusive interviews with superstars including Austin Aries, Gail Kim, Tyrus, former WWE Champion Jack Swagger, Kenny King, Sienna, Cobra Moon, Chris Adonis, Charlotte Flair, and many, many more, follow the podcast on social media. Find Arm Drag Takedown on Facebook and Twitter at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. And we are back with more of episode 11, featuring our exclusive interview later in this hour with newly crowned NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis. You may know him as Magnus, a former Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, or perhaps from his reign as Global Force Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion as well. He is the first competitor in history to hold all three of those belts. Meanwhile, let's go to our Arm Drag Takedown of the Sunday, December 17th, WWE Clash of Champions pay-per-view event. I don't want to spend a great deal of time on this pay-per-view, but I am the first one to admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong on more than 50% of my predictions for this particular pay-per-view. First and foremost, I strongly said last week, without question, without hesitation, that Dolph Ziggler was going to take the pinfall in his triple threat match for the United States Heavyweight Championship against Baron Corbin and Bobby Roode. And boy, I could not have been more wrong. For the second time in his career, Dolph Ziggler is wearing the United States Heavyweight Championship in a turn of events that I don't think that anyone who follows the sport or sports entertainment would have called. There is no way leading into this pay-per-view that I would have ever thought that Dolph Ziggler would leave as the new United States champion, and I could not be happier to be wrong. Dolph deserves this victory as well as all of the push and focus it is going to turn on his career, because I was calling just last week for Dolph to leave his WWE contract and go where his talents would be better utilized. I still do think that Dolph would do better for himself outside of WWE than in. But as long as the World Wrestling Entertainment is going to turn the attention on Dolph Ziggler, I am happy. I'm a happy camper because I think that he has been gravely underutilized throughout the vast majority of his career. And I think that if anything, this could lead to a stellar series of matches between Rude and Ziggler for the championship. My fingers are crossed to the point of cramping that Baron Corbin will promptly be removed from contention, because I found his time as U.S. champion woefully boring. The man was engaged in a multi-week feud with Sin Cara, who had not even been on WWE television in months, and he could barely pick up a decisive victory over the man. Having him as U.S. champion did nothing to elevate this as a secondary title on SmackDown, and at least with Dolph Ziggler holding the championship, we are assured of a series of good matches. Say what you will about his in-ring character or the way he is portrayed on television, but as an in-ring performer, few on the WWE roster can live up to the type of matches that Dolph Ziggler is capable of putting on. After this run, who knows where the future will lead him, but for the time being, I am happy to see a man with quality in-ring skills holding the WWE United States Championship. Turning now to the SmackDown Tag Team Division, it was no shock to pretty much anyone, I don't think, that the Usos left Clash of Champions with the titles still around their waist. I could not foresee Gable and Benjamin taking the belts from them, or Rusev and Aiden English, despite the fact that I actually would have actually enjoyed that. I would have enjoyed it a lot, I think. And where the New Day is concerned, it's time for the New Day to step back a little bit and allow other teams to be elevated. What we see in the upcoming weeks for the tag team division is yet to be certain, but for now, it looks like the Usos have an iron grasp on the tag team championships on SmackDown. SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair, who was our special guest last week. If you did not hear my exclusive interview with Charlotte, please go back to Arm Drag Takedown Episode 10, where Charlotte heaps praise on her rival at Clash of Champions, Natty Neidhart, as well as discusses her new book, Second Nature, and life as the daughter of nature boy Ric Flair. But Natty and Charlotte faced off in a lumberjack match at Clash of Champions, with Charlotte coming out with the championship still in her grasp. Where that leaves Natty in the big picture, nobody is certain at this point, but it looks like Charlotte is going to be the face of SmackDown's women's roster going forward as we move towards the upcoming Women's Royal Rumble match in January. We will talk more about that, or rather, I will talk more about that and my thoughts on it in a little bit, but congratulations to Charlotte Flair. And I look forward to seeing the continuation of where the newly arrived NXT talent go on the SmackDown roster. In what many people have described as the best match of Jinder Mahal's career, he was defeated in his efforts to regain the SmackDown World Heavyweight Championship from AJ Styles. It was a fantastic match for both men, and Styles comes out on top, asserting himself as the dominant performer on SmackDown Live. I once again incorrectly called this one because I predicted that Mahal would become a two-time SmackDown World Heavyweight Champion at the Clash of Champions. So I was wrong. WWE has thrown a curveball as far as I could tell. I did think that Mahal would potentially defeat Styles going on to face John Cena when he returns at Royal Rumble. Where this leaves Mahal, I'm not certain, but I will tell you this. This is unrelated specifically to Clash of Champions, but I was reading an interview recently with Triple H when he addressed the issue of why specifically he defeated Jinder Mahal on the WWE's recent tour of India. In it, he told the reporter that in India, just because Mahal is Indian, it doesn't mean that he's super over. He's much more popular there, perhaps, than he is in the United States. But in India, he said, fans have a great appreciation for icons of the industry, himself included. And he said that it was because of the way that fans in India perceive and view him that he went over on Jinder Mahal there. Well, I thought that was a really self-serving response, because the reality of situations is, yes, all fans around the world have a great appreciation for icons like a Triple H, like a Shawn Michaels, like a Ric Flair. These people who are iconic in the industry, of course, have a huge following no matter where they would be competing, whether that's in India or the United States. Presumably, Triple H has a particular status no matter where he goes as a multi-time champion, as a person who has wrestled for years in the past. But my thought on that was, if you really want to put Jinder Mahal over as a valid contender for any championship, if you want to solidify Jinder Mahal as a championship or main event caliber wrestler, the way to do that is not to have him lose to what many would perceive as a novelty act at this point in his career. And by that, I mean certainly Triple H has not probably lost a step in the ring, but he is not a full-time competitor. He is not a full-time member of the roster. You do not have somebody basically come out of retirement and defeat one of the biggest names or one of the people who is allegedly the biggest names on one of your brands. You do not have somebody who is going into a pay-per-view main event match against your world heavyweight champion lose in front of a hometown audience in India. If you want to solidify Jinder Mahal as a future Hall of Famer, at least in the minds of the Indian populace, you allow him to defeat, whether that is through nefarious means or otherwise, a person like Triple H, which would then cement his place in history. He would then become the person who, in front of an audience of thousands, tens of thousands of enthusiastic fans, was able to defeat one of the legends of the industry. Yes, I get it, Triple H. The Indian fans put you on a pedestal. It's well deserved. You've earned your place in history as one of the greatest of all time. But if you want to push Jinder Mahal, then you put him over big in front of the audience. That's called a star turn. You're making a star. By putting yourself over, all you're doing is basically reinforcing in the minds of people who are watching that Jinder Mahal is unable to win a big one against you. And if he can't beat you, then what is to make me, as a person who is potentially going to buy a pay-per-view, believe that he can beat AJ Styles, the best in the world today? You were the best in the world 10 years ago, 15 years ago. AJ Styles is undoubtedly the best in the world today. So if Jinder Mahal can't pull out a victory over you, how am I to believe that he's going to defeat AJ Styles? Again, as I said, where this leaves Jinder Mahal going forward, I'm not certain. Will he fade back into obscurity, as often has been the case when people receive a push from WWE and then it doesn't seem to pay off? Please review Jack Swagger. Please review any number of other men who've had short-term runs with the World Heavyweight Championship only to become a mid-card wrestler within months of their championship loss. I hope for the sake of Jinder Mahal that's not the case, but what I will say is I'm not very optimistic about the long-term momentum for his push. Put things in perspective. Remember, Triple H put over Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is now the King Killer. So Seth Rollins was able to pull out a victory over Triple H, but Jinder Mahal, who is a top name on SmackDown, isn't? whew, doesn't look good. Fingers crossed that he does not fade back into 3MB status, because that would be not only horrible for the brand, but honestly, I think it would undermine a great deal of trust in those fans who were willing to buy into the push that Jinder Mahal has received over the last 6 months. It's obvious that is not everyone, but for those who have gotten into the modern day Maharaja as a top name and a top tier talent in the main event roster and as a SmackDown World Heavyweight Champion, if he were to suddenly fall back into the status that he had right up until the moment that he won the World Heavyweight Champion, it would feel like a significant slap in the face for the willing suspension of disbelief that so many of us showed in accepting him as champion for the last almost 6 months. And finally, in perhaps the most talked about event to come from Clash of Champions, it was Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn taking on Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan as the special guest referees. Well, it should shock nobody that Shane was unwilling to count a pinfall victory for Owens and Zayn, which brought Daniel Bryan into a moment of conflict with his boss as he was forced to give the victory to Zayn and Owens via a fast count. Now, this is clearly going to play out, and for anyone who is not deaf, dumb, or blind, this has been broadcast as where this angle has been headed for the last several weeks. What it will mean for Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon as things move forward on SmackDown, we don't know. And what will the fallout be for Owens and Zayn as Shane is clearly upset and obsessed with the thought that they were supposed to be fired after Clash of Champions? This will all begin to play out over the next coming weeks, clearly leading up until January, perhaps even taking us all the way through until the Royal Rumble. Speaking of the Royal Rumble, it was announced on Monday's Raw that there will be, in fact, a Women's Royal Rumble match taking place this year. It's the first ever Women's Royal Rumble, and now is the perfect time for such a groundbreaking event. We just saw countless competitors in the Mae Young Classic tournament over the course of the summer, as well as having full rosters on both Raw and SmackDown with the five new NXT imports, as well as the returning Paige. The announcement of this Women's Royal Rumble is once again not a surprise to anyone who has closely followed speculation about the sport or about the industry. It has been long said and speculated that this would be occurring this year. And what it specifically is going to entail, I am unclear on, but what my gut says is that this is going to be the catapult which leads Asuka to victory in this match and then on to her WrestleMania moment where she is crowned the new women's champion. In my mind, Asuka is the clear-cut victor here and the only person who should win this match, unless WWE is going to choose this moment as a star-making opportunity for the next individual who will be coming up from NXT, whomever that might be. But at this juncture, Asuka is the frontrunner, in my opinion, and this is the moment that is going to solidify her as a top contender. I look forward to seeing what WWE does with this, and I'm very excited to see which legends of the women's industry they might have come back for a one-night-only return. Remember, in the past, we've seen the return of such people as Hacksaw Jim Duggan and others to compete in the Royal Rumble. Of course, they've not won when they've returned, but it's been a great opportunity for fans to see favorites of yesteryear competing on a pay-per-view one last time, possibly. Shifting gears to women's action over on Impact Wrestling's weekly Thursday night broadcast on Pop TV, this week we saw Laurel Van Ness defeat Rosemary in the finals of the tournament to crown a new Knockouts women's champion. The interesting thing to note about this victory is not only that it's Laurel Van Ness's first time as a Knockouts champion, but the disheartening reality that within days of taping this match, wherein she achieved her greatest success as an in-ring performer in Impact Wrestling, she reportedly requested her release from the company. Now, I'm left to wonder what would be going on behind the scenes off of television that we don't know about as viewers that would encourage a woman who is receiving her biggest solo push in the company to request her release. We're talking about somebody willing to give up a championship that she had just won to go test the waters elsewhere. Now, either this means that there is a big offer at play for Laurel Van Ness somewhere, or she feels that she's being shortchanged in some capacity with her current Impact Wrestling contract. Laurel, over the past year or so, as the insane, drunken version of herself, has become possibly the single most compelling character on all of Impact Wrestling. Definitely one of my favorite on-screen personalities, and if she leaves Impact, I am going to be devastated. Fingers crossed that Impact and Laurel Van Ness can work something out. Making news elsewhere in what has been a huge week for women's wrestling fans, Ring of Honor has announced a 16-woman tournament to crown the first ever Women of Honor champion. They will have 16 competitors, and they have been steadily building out their women's division. I talked a few weeks ago to Ring of Honor star and then television champion Kenny King about the possibility of a women's champion coming to Ring of Honor, and it looks like they are pulling the trigger on this in 2018. Of course, that came as an announcement at Ring of Honor's final battle on December 15th, which, in our final note for this week's Arm Drag Takedown of events in and around the world of professional wrestling, congratulations go out to Dalton Castle as the Peacock upended the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes at Ring of Honor's final battle on December 15th to win his first ever Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. Now, Ring of Honor did a great build for Dalton Castle leading into this match against Cody Rhodes. I would not have put money on Dalton walking out with the belt, but once again, proving that this week has not been my greatest moment in terms of calling the outcomes of pay-per-view events, I would have been completely wrong in this. I felt for sure that the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, had an extended Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship ahead of him, but Dalton Castle becomes only the 24th man in wrestling history to hold the Ring of Honor World title. For those who do not follow Ring of Honor, the world title has been held by greats in the industry, including Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, and many more. It was possibly a tremendous risk for Ring of Honor to put this championship on Dalton Castle, but his popularity with Ring of Honor fans is growing dramatically, and huge things seem to be ahead for the Peacock. Congratulations, Dalton Castle, and I look forward to seeing your defenses of the Ring of Honor world title, as well as seeing what the future holds for Cody Rhodes. And that concludes this week's Arm Drag Takedown recap of the world of professional wrestling. After this momentary break, we will be back with my exclusive interview with newly crowned NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, who defeated Tim Storm at a Combat Zone wrestling show just December 9th. Nick Aldis, the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, is here to discuss the 10 pounds of gold, Billy Corgan, Dave Lagana, and all of the future of NWA, as well as life married to WWE superstar Mickie James. All of that and much more is ahead on Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. Follow Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar on Facebook and Twitter. Find our social media by searching ADT with PDM. ADT with PDM. That's Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar.
WWE superstar Charlotte Flair, and you are listening to Arm Drag Takedown. Woo! you.
Awesome. I'm very excited for our conversation today. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate that.
No worries.
And it appears the congratulations are in order. Just days ago, you defeated Tim Storm for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I was curious, as a performer and a wrestler with such a storied career, what does winning the NWA Championship mean to you?
Obviously, there's a great deal of prestige. There's a responsibility that falls with that. But we're not trying to shy away from the fact that it, you know, had a less than glamorous tenure, you know, since the heyday of the NWA. But you know, we're not ashamed of it. But we're also not trying to hide that. You know, it's my responsibility. Just like I've taken on any other time I've been a world champion in other promotions, to try and elevate it and elevate the opponents that I face while I'm the champion.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, and I'm glad that you came right out and addressed it. The lineage of the NWA Championship has become a little bit muddied, we'll say, over the last, I don't know, number of years. I think that there are a significant number of people who might be unaware that the championship has even still existed and has gone through people like Rob Conway and up to, and more recently, Tim Storm. So what are the plans in action that are going to kind of reassert the unparalleled lineage of the belt?
Like I said, I don't think we're going to try and hide it. You know, it's certainly not something that we're also going to spend a great deal of time on either, because ultimately the legacy of the championship is a subjective thing to most fans. I think for the most part, we don't really need to do a lot to remind people or to promote the fact that it was held by Harley Race or Ric Flair or Terry Funk or Dory Funk Jr. or Jack Briscoe, you know, a Luthead. People are aware of that. And that's the part of the championship history that is looked on most fondly. So we just allow that to dominate people's thoughts. We're not going to try and hide any other part of it, like I say, but certainly the more recent history of it is what it is. You know, that's, I think, all in all, I think that what you're going to see with the NWA compared to any other promotion is that we're putting out something very authentic. We're basically embracing every element of it, you know, good and bad, and letting people enjoy that story, because there's entertainment and there's a compelling story in everything, you know, and I think a perfect example of that is the 10 Pounds of Gold series, which was, you know, predominantly focused around Tim Storm first, and then obviously myself as the challenger, and obviously the ones going forward will focus on me winning the championship. But, you know, let's call the spade a spade. Tim Storm was relatively unknown, and we took that, or I say we, you know, Dave Lagana and Billy as the managing editor, you know, and executive producer, took that story, and instead of trying to pretend that certain elements of it that some people might look at as negative didn't exist, they in fact embraced those, and then they made that a compelling part of the story. And in fact, that's the part that people have been most interested in. It's like, wow, you know, what a great guy. What an interesting story. I'm so compelled. I'm just really rooting for him. Like, it really means so much to him. You know, you can find the elements of people's real lives, make them into a compelling story if you know how to do it right. And so really, we're all, you know, very happy with the long and storied history of the NWA leading up to now, because ultimately all of that tapestry becomes part of who we are today and who we'll be tomorrow and next year and 10 years from now.
Yeah, I absolutely would agree with that. And I would look to other companies and the way, I'm just, you know, since we're calling spades a spade, I'm going to say that, you know, as a longtime viewer, for example, of Impact, it's so friggin' frustrating to every year or so have a new management team come in and deride the previous management team on television. I mean, if the product has been less than stellar, then don't tell me it's been less than stellar. Don't give me excuses.
Sure.
Just change the direction and focus on what is current. And it feels like
Sure. That
is the tactic that NWA is taking, saying, you know, we're aware that we've fallen off your radar for a long time, and this is a continuation of a story, and every story has ebbs and flows, and this is what is happening now.
Yeah, and it's almost, you know, the fact that, let's be honest, you know, the NWA in its existence prior to Billy acquiring it was really, you know, minimal. So it wasn't like we had to sort of address, or we didn't feel this need to address what it had been, because it had not been on television and it had not been considered in the sort of upper echelon of wrestling promotion. So it really wasn't anything to worry about, you know. But I agree with you fully on the TNA example, and that's an opinion that was voiced by myself and many others while we were there. You know, we said, like, you know, aren't we just advertising that the product that many of us were a part of was bad? You know, and how does that, I don't understand how that helps, you know. But yeah, I always thought Billy's analogy was great. Like, it's, you know, that place just became like Game of Thrones, and it was, you know, all people cared about was being king. They didn't care about, you know, what was actually left of the kingdom.
Right, and the unfortunate reality was that when they came in and they were railing against their own past, they were talking about people in management roles, and it, as you pointed out, kind of undermines the contributions of people who were busting their asses, so to speak, in the ring, and putting out the best product possible given what they were allowed to work with. And, you know, I've been a fan of the product, and there have been highs and lows, and I think that some of the matches have been fantastic and some of the decisions have been questionable, but overall, when you're watching, I think that the ultimate takeaway is the in-ring product and not the behind-the-scenes drama, and I've never been a huge fan of the behind-the-scenes drama trumping, so to speak, what's going on in the ring.
Yeah, we joked for a long time, which sort of lends itself to what we're doing now with the NWA and the 10 pounds of gold and all of this stuff. These are all things that I have talked to with Dave, you know, for many years and have voiced as stuff that we needed to do. You know, I pitched these ideas to TNA, they fell on deaf ears. But it was, we used to joke, you know, like, hey, if they put the cameras back here, we'd double our ratings, you know, and because there was just so much, you know, unpredictable craziness going on all the time, and unfortunately, what suffered most was the product. But look, you know, it is what it is. I think that ultimately, you know, that's a big part of my career. It's the biggest part of my career. So I'm certainly also not gonna be a hypocrite by, you know, sitting here and burying them. You know, the mistakes that were made are there for all to see. But ultimately, they lost the trust of the audience, which is why I decided to move on. You know, because the trust is the most important thing, and I think that what we're doing here at the NWA is at the moment is heading towards a great deal of trust, and I think we're all on the same page with that. And hopefully, we continue that forward and we build it into something really special.
I do want to talk to you, obviously, about the very interesting tactic that NWA is taking to build their new audience, and a huge part of that is through the very regular YouTube series clips and things like the 10 pounds of gold. Talk to me about that approach, the very grassroots style approach to building an audience.
Well, if you look at the brands that are emerging as the leaders in their field in our current era, this is the way that they're doing it. And I'm certainly not the brains behind this, you know, although my input has been, you know, taken on board, which is nice. And it's nice to be, and it's gratifying when you see it get such a positive reaction. But let's put it this way. I think the UFC has been doing pro wrestling better than pro wrestling. And essentially, if you change the final outcome of the build to a UFC fight with an NWA World Championship match from the 80s, almost, you know, a whole lot of it leading up to that is very much the same, because they spent way more time, if you go back and look at the television that was put out back then, a whole lot of it was building anticipation to one match, you know, or it was just solidifying a feud between two guys in a very authentic way. And, you know, obviously things were very different then in terms of availability of content, but the reality was that if you wanted to see these two guys go at it, you know, without any interference or in the full match, you had to buy a ticket or you had to tune into this pay-per-view or this special, you know, Clash of Champions or whatever it would be. And that's essentially what UFC's model is, because they put out embedded, they put out these, you know, they put out these smaller cards and stuff on free TV, but everything else they put out is what? Press conferences, interviews, profile pieces, all of which is leading to the fight. The fight is the attraction. When I was approached by Dave and Billy about, you know, coming on early, you know, obviously I was flattered. And there were a number of guys who, I guess, turned them down as well, you know, and I'm sure some of those will probably regret that decision down the line. But what I heard, I enjoyed, and what I took away from it the most was the fact that they said, look, this is the way that we want to approach, you know, the content. And I said, great, because that's where I think it's going. And the thing is now with wrestling, you can turn on any device, anytime, any day of the week, and you can see new in-ring product. You can see wrestling matches. You can see them from Japan. You can see them from Mexico. You can see them all over the States. You can see them from England. You know, you can see them from virtually anywhere. And I don't know how you penetrate that marketplace of any significance by just putting out more wrestling matches. What you need is talent as far as being able to produce and build people and tell people stories. And again, you know, I think our proof is right there for everyone to see with such, you know, such a short period of time to develop the buzz that we have. It's only going to get better from here.
On a recent episode, on my episode 9 of my podcast, Tyrus came on and he was talking about some of the things, for example, that he feels would benefit Impact in their storytelling. And my eyes lit up when he mentioned going back to old episodes of Mid-South wrestling, based out of Houston. That's what I grew up on, Mid-South and the UWF. And what you say is so true. I don't remember any specific matches per se, maybe a handful, but what I remember are the incredible and compelling stories that built the anticipation for those eventual matches. I mean, at this point, I think with major companies like WWE, the focus is so much on selling the next pay-per-view that all we see are 3 weeks of build for a match. And that's, you know, I would rather go back to getting a full 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks even of build for a real payoff in a match versus getting a whole bunch of different pieces of that match leading up to it. I mean, I skim WWE products most of the time because it feels so redundant, and I'd much rather they really pack a punch with what they've got rather than giving it to me piecemeal.
All right. I mean, and you know, so I'm not gonna get in here with my, you know, with my criticisms of WWE. I mean, they're the market leader. My wife works there. You know, obviously I grew up watching them, so it's not like I want to sort of delve into that. You know, they have their way of doing things, and they have a responsibility to their, you know, stockholders. But yes, certainly, you know, the commitment of producing 5 live hours of television every week, plus whatever else they're producing, is, you know, it's a whole different ball game. You know, the luxury that the NWA has is the ability to take a risk and do things differently. And for us, you know, we looked at the things that grabbed our attention. I'm not a huge boxing fan, for example. I like boxing, but I'm not watching every boxing card that comes on. I'm not watching even a small percentage of the boxing cards that come on. But I love the 24/7s that HBO do, and I love the All Access things that Showtime do. And before I know it, I'm going, I'm going to see Canelo and Triple G. You know, I didn't really know a whole lot about them before. I knew them both. So I wasn't anywhere near familiar with them as far as, like, who they were and everything. But by the end of those 24/7s, now I'm, like, weighing in going, oh, my God, who's going to, you know, and that's storytelling, you know. And what happened was, somewhere along the lines, people in our business got convinced by some charlatans who were posing as peddlers of information and news, who are actually just peddling their opinion. They got hoodwinked into thinking that the most important thing in our business was the match in the ring. And I got into this to tell stories and to get people invested into characters and to do emotion. Because look, I was a good athlete. Like, I got national level in swimming, and I was good at some other sports. If I'd have wanted to just focus on being a serious athlete, I would have committed to a real sport. Like, I wanted to be an entertainer. I wanted to be able to indulge in all of the things that pro wrestling provide that real sports don't provide. And for some reason, London, the emphasis has swung so much on the just on the physical execution of wrestling moves, which to me is such low-hanging fruit and just boring. So we're in a situation now where we're showing something else, and we're going, look, we're in the movie business, guys. These are authentic characters that make you care, and that's where we're at. And I think that as we continue to progress, like, that's the formula that's going to work for us.
It's interesting that you talk about the authenticity factor, because yesterday, knowing that we were going to be speaking today, I texted Dave Lagana and asked him, you know, is there anything specific that you guys might be interested that I don't know about that you want to discuss? And he responded back so simply. He said, just ask the questions that seem most authentic. I mean, there was no guidance. Yeah. There was no, you know, pushing of a storyline or none of that. It was just about the authenticity of the interview. And I appreciated that, especially given the fact that there are other companies or other promotions specifically that really want to guide the direction of the story.
Yeah, look, this is my thing, right? I don't want to talk about other wrestling promotions because I don't work for them. And even if I have worked for them before, the management is probably so different now that it may as well be a different company. And I have friends who work in several, and I have, obviously, my wife works in one. So it's like, that's not interesting to me. Like, there are thousands of unqualified people already weighing in on the wrestling business, as it is. I want to talk about what I'm qualified to talk about, which is what I'm doing as me, as a talent, as Nick Aldis, you know, as the NWA World Champion, and where I think things will be 6 months from now, 12 months from now, 2 years from now, or whatever. The rest of this stuff, like, I'll let all the other, you know, talking heads weigh on that stuff. That's not interesting to me.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that is certainly notable about the direction that Billy and Dave seem to be taking NWA is that they're returning it to what I would think is a touring style of promotion, where you take your championship to various regional promotions to defend the belt. And I was wondering, what are the future and upcoming promotions that you are going to be taking your championship to, and where will you be popping up with the 10 pounds of gold?
Well, that's a part of the approach. It's certainly not the only part, and I would venture to say that going forward, it's not even going to be the main part. It is something that is still currently in existence that may change because, you know, who knows? But obviously, deals come in place and different things happen with companies where things might suddenly change in terms of necessity. Right now, you know, you got to have reps as a wrestler, and so part of that is obviously needing to stay active. Part of it is just making a living, but also it's just about keeping it, you know, keeping the championship busy and with worthy promotions and worthy opponents. And we have, obviously, I had a fair amount of bookings in 2018 already in before winning the championship. So now some of those will become championship, and if they work with the NWA on things that need to be in place in order to make that happen, such as, you know, letting the production come in and document it and things like that, which to me is a huge opportunity for certain promotions, especially overseas, you know, to be part of the credibility. Because believe me, some of these guys have got a great opportunity that they probably don't even realize what a good opportunity is right now because it's such a grassroots level. But as far as all that stuff goes, it's not my call. That's a Billy and Lagana call, and as far as defending the championship goes, they come up, I go and do my job, and I do it the best I can.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, if, with your extensive history in the UK, of course, and in Japan, if you had future opportunities to take the gold there.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime I get to go back to the UK, it's great for me anyway, but certainly, you know, to go there with a championship that had some prestige, I relish the opportunity. Plus, I take great pride in the fact that I was one of many British pro wrestlers who helped, you know, create more awareness for our boys and girls. You know what I mean? Like, instead of just being a token British guy on every card who does some technical wrestling and some European holds and blah, 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 like being taken seriously is like, look, these guys and they can work and they can make people care. You know, so I take great pride in playing my part in that. Obviously, being the first, you know, British world champion in TNA, and you know, the other things I've done along the way. So, again, anytime I get a chance to say, you know, you guys need to look at this particular guy in the UK or this particular guy, like, you know, he'd be a worthy contender. Like, you know, he deserves a shot. We should tell his story and give him a shot at the title. So, that, yeah, that means a lot to me to be able to do that.
There are so many phenomenal wrestlers who are now on the indie scene, from your old Impact rival James Storm to Tyrus, who I mentioned, both of whom hold victories over you in the past, and even our local All-Pro Wrestling Universal Champion Jeff Cobb just defeated you in August, and I was wondering if those men would fall in line for opportunities at your belt.
Well, again, look, it's not up to me, but those guys you mentioned all certainly seem, if you're asking me personally, they're all guys worthy of a shot, you know, so I'm sure that would be something that we would address and, you know, and discuss. I've had my eye on Jeff Cobb for quite some time, and looks like I'm not the only one.
Well, yeah, Jeff, like I said, he's a local favorite here in Northern California, where I'm based, and puts on incredible matches. I just saw him at a local All-Pro Wrestling Super Card defeat Jack Swagger. It was a great match, and he is really kind of setting the indie scene on fire. So I would think that it would be a fantastic match between the two of you. I'm sad that I have not seen your confrontation at Hardcore Wrestling.
What's more interesting to me than just having great matches is the fact that he has a compelling story to tell.
Absolutely. Now, I want to talk to you about, I guess he's your new manager, Austin Idol. Austin was he wrestled in the very first ever pro wrestling match I ever saw on television. It was Austin Idol versus Jerry the King Lawler, and from that moment on, I was hooked on professional wrestling. He's so colorful, such a good promo, and during his era, certainly a fantastic in-ring performer. So I was wondering how the two of you joined forces.
Well, he had developed a relationship with Billy over the last couple of years. They developed a friendship, and he's still, you know, incredibly fit and healthy and in great shape. And he's, he's still as sharp-witted as ever. And it just became something to where Billy called me and explained that, you know, they had a friendship. And he said, I think there's something there with you two. I see a lot of parallels between you and Austin. And, you know, Idol, through his own personal decisions and some through circumstance stuff, just never quite broke the mainstream sort of national stage, because at the time there wasn't necessarily a need to. So, you know, unfortunately, maybe in the long-standing history of things, he's not quite as well regarded as he probably deserves to be, as far as, you know, what an innovative talent he was. And certainly when you look back at some of his stuff and you go, wow, like, this was great work for a heavyweight in that era, and promos are on the money, his work is great, he obviously had a great physique. You know, he presents a package that you go, man, you put that in a different set of circumstances, and he's up there with Hogan or anybody else. So I think there's certainly an affection there as far as Billy goes, but I think there's also value to that, because he's not been recycled a bunch of times, is perhaps a polite way of saying it. You know, like, because he's, in a way, he has a great opportunity here to be almost introduced as a new character to a whole new generation of fans, because certainly through YouTube and through different things and through, like, some of it I'm sure is on the WWE Network and different things, people can go back and find his stuff. But then he also has the chance to just show everyone he's going to be a breakout star of wrestling in 2018, which is a really odd thing to say about a guy who has already had a storied career and had stardom of his own, but do you know what I mean when I say that?
Well, absolutely.
So I think when people see all this stuff and they see his personality coming through, like, you have no choice but to get into this guy.
Right. And I, first and foremost, I think that the role of the manager, if that is in fact what he is going to become or what he is going to be portrayed as, is a lost art in professional wrestling. There's so few.
Great.
And that is something that an entire generation of fans like myself, I grew up idolizing the managers almost more than I idolized any professional wrestler. So that is something that I would be excited to watch develop, first of all. And second of all, what I kind of hear you say is when we think of, for example, Classy Freddie Blassie or Bobby the Brain Heenan or many other professional wrestlers, wrestling managers, many people, like my generation alone of the, from the 80s, really didn't recall those men as in-ring performers. We just knew them as a manager and among the best ever. And I think that certainly Austin Idol could fill that role and see a similar rebirth.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're hoping to do. And we felt there was a strong enough link there, but it was also just kind of off base enough to make people go, what's happened? What's this? You know, like, it was funny to me to see the reaction of people in the business. Like, you'd be amazed at what people reach out to you, you know, and for, you know, especially in the positions they're in and stuff. But, you know, like, so many were like, Austin Idol is your manager? Like, that's crazy. Like, what? That's so ridiculous. That's awesome. You know, like, so out of left field. Because a lot of the time, despite the fact that wrestling is, by definition, supposed to be a sort of crazy, over-the-top form of entertainment, sometimes the guys in it, you know, you become so deeply in it that you end up following all these rules that really don't need to be followed. You know, for example, they could have easily just found, like, an old British wrestler and said, oh, he should be your manager, you know, and it's kind of like, that's boring. Well, why did he have to be British? You know what I mean? Like, and so with this, the way that they look at me and the way they look at Idol is almost like, I think in many ways I represent what they think Idol could have, you know, perhaps should have deserved to be, you know, in that time period as far as being a world champion and realizing his potential. And not to say that he didn't, because he made money and he's healthy now and he's happy and all the rest of it. So, I mean, you know, you can look at it any way you want. But I think the way they look at it is they see the parallels there in terms of style of performer, in terms of attitude. Certainly, if you understand Austin Idol, the man, you understand that here's a guy who, you know, he marched to the beat of his own drum. And I think that's the parallel that they saw most, because they know me and they know that I'm a guy that does that too. You know, I follow my own rules.
I would 100% think that Austin Idol deserved far greater in the professional wrestling industry than he got. I am somebody who recognizes his level of achievement because I've always been a student of the game. I remember as a child scouring magazines, because that's all we had at the time. There was only a limited amount of availability of wrestling content. But I would scour the magazines, and I was aware, even though he was feuding in Memphis, which was hundreds of miles from my home, with Jerry Lawler, about that. And I was, you know, of course, had special interest in him because he, in many ways, is responsible for my love for the wrestling industry. But I can understand if NWA's focus is on telling compelling stories about its performers, why his story would be so exciting for them. He has decades and generations of history to delve into, and how that could play out as a person who wants to ensure that through his management and guidance, his charges achieve the success that he feels was robbed of him. You know, that's a compelling story.
And believe me, look, he's in the right place, because he's going to get all that and more from the NWA. Like I said, I try to avoid this because it's so prevalent in wrestling for people to say, oh, big things on the horizon, you know, big announcement coming up and blah, blah, blah. So we're staying tight-lipped. But just know this, he knows he's in the right place. And in the not-too-distant future, those of us who are on board now are going to be looking and going, like, we told you so.
You mentioned wanting to discuss where you see NWA in 6 months or a year, and I'm very curious where it is that you do see the company.
I try to have broad strokes when it comes to visions of where things are, and obviously some of it is based on what I know, and some of it is based on what I feel in my gut. And normally, you know, I'm pretty right on this. Like, and this is something that some people don't like to, you know, they don't like to accept about me, is that if they've worked with me at TNA or in different places, a lot of the time I have a pretty good instinct for this stuff, and I'm usually pretty accurate in terms of what I predicted, you know, where things are going to be. And with this, the right pieces of the puzzle are in place. And as long as there aren't any major hiccups or, you know, problems, which obviously is not something I can foresee, you know,
we
do our best to alleviate them. But sans some kind of catastrophic situation, there's going to be a new player on the board. Let's just put it like that.
Through the development of 10 Pounds of Gold, we got to learn and become familiar with Tim Storm as the NWA champion. We're now getting to see more. I mean, you just released your holiday video with Austin. And
wasn't that a heartwarming holiday message?
So heartwarming. Whoever is that? If that's your home, you've obviously done quite well for yourself. It's gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was curious, as they begin to build out the product, obviously one of the things that's going to become part of it is the need to tell the story of other competitors within the NWA. And I was wondering who it is that we could be looking for to start seeing in NWA vignettes.
That's a good question. And I'd love to be able to say for sure. I can say who I'd like, you know, to see, or who I think might be, you know, good candidates for some of that stuff.
Go for it.
We already mentioned Jeff Cobb. I think that the people who have been using him so far have missed the biggest trick as far as with him is his story. You know, like you're talking about an Olympian from Guam. You know, I mean, there's so much to delve into. You know, seeing him wrestle is great because he's a you know, great physical talent, but that's such a small part of the overall tapestry of what we do. So he'd certainly be someone I'd recommend. And look, my influence is as strong as any wrestler's influence should be, which is they take on my advice and then they make their decision, you know, like any in line with my level of experience and their level of trust in me. So it's certainly not like I have any stroke or pull. And I present things in an unbiased way. I don't have any axes to grind, and I look at things from a business point of view. So with that being said, another guy who I would love to see his story get told to fit and complement and put that last piece together of his brilliant physical talent would be Willie Mack. And then, you know, there's a bunch of other guys who perhaps have had opportunities elsewhere, but just they weren't presented in the right way, or they didn't get the chance to tell their story how they thought it should be told. Or there are some guys like me who were on television for a long period of time, but were so young perhaps when they first got a shot that they were finding themselves all the while, you know, on television. And so the real life persona was more compelling than what they were being told to be when they were walking out, you know, in front of the camera. Like, because what you see with me is me. Like, you know, you say it's polarizing, great, I don't give a shit. Just pay attention. And I think that the more we present like that, we're golden, man.
I mean, sitting here listening to this interview as it's developing, and it just occurred to me why it is that both you and Lagana have continually mentioned authenticity is because what I'm gathering here is that the storytelling that interests all of you isn't the storytelling that, for example, we might be used to in professional wrestling, where the characters are a construct of some creative team. You are finding the story, and this is, as a journalist, something that I've always loved doing through my interviews. You're finding the story that's compelling based on who the people really are, as opposed to forcing them to be somebody they're not. You mentioned, for example, Jeff Cobb and people missing the boat on him. That's because they've thrown him in a work suit and under a mask, and they've never really addressed the incredible talent of who Jeff Cobb is and the story of who Jeff Cobb really is.
The crux of all compelling content to me is human interest. And I think more so than ever, people don't want their intelligence insulted. They want to feel something. And to me, the best way to make someone feel something is to present your real feelings and to give them, you know, an authentic taste, people have a sixth sense. They may not even be able to put their finger on it right away. But ultimately, you know when you're being presented something. Like, and look, some guys have made a boatload of money being phony as all hell. Like, and that's the truth. Like, and not just in who they are in the ring, but even when they do their "this is the real me," you know, behind the scenes, or when they're on a reality show, whatever. That's all. Like, I see through it, because to be good at this business, you have to have a handle on psychology, like on basic human psychology and sociology. And to me, when you know, there are certain guys who have done very well for themselves, and more power to them. But I see through them, and I go, "This guy's not authentic. This guy's phony." You know, none of this is real. And we just looked at it and went, you know, let's be real here. The WWE are the market leader in that realm. Like, that's what they do, and they do it the best. We're doing something else. You know, and that's it. Like, so we're comfortable in that, and anyone who comes on board with the NWA needs to be prepared to be in that same vein and not just, "Hey, look how well I execute these wrestling moves. Everybody, please give me some affirmation on my social media, or please make gifs of my high spots, or, hey, you know, please buy into this phony creation that I'm putting out for everyone." Like, that ain't what we're doing here.
I wanted you to talk about the unexpected creative genius in the realm of professional wrestling of Billy Corgan. We've known him for a musical genius, but this seems to be an area of such expertise for him that, as a longtime fan, I'm kind of blown away by it.
I'll tell you what it's more about, and certainly not something he has. He does, but I'll tell you what he has in his mind, and that's the difference.
Okay, hold on, say that again, because you cut out right away.
Sorry. What he has, which is perhaps more important, is a brilliant business mind. And the combination of the two is what's really great about working with him, because there have been guys in the past who have been incredibly creative, who have some wonderful ideas and have just this never-ending fountain of creative out of nowhere stuff, but because their handle on commercial success is maybe not as strong as it needs to be, or because their own ego is too fragile, or they're too desperate to hang on to their spot, and so they don't want to give up any decisions to anybody else, you end up with one person's vision. And one person's vision is never enough. You need a guy whose buck stops with that guy, which is Billy, but he also understands what sells. You know, his success is not by accident. You know, and he applied the principles that he looked in a business, and then surrounded himself with a team of guys to fill in the bits that he didn't have, which was experience in the wrestling business and elements in play. I feel very good about it.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Lagana certainly has that experience. So two of them together make an impressive team. I would definitely say.
Yes, and there's trust, which is the most important thing. You know, so many things get lost in larger creative teams and corporate structures of wrestling companies because everybody is so job scared that they're all too busy trying to deflect, any ideas because it wasn't their idea. And they go, "Oh, God. Like, if they like this idea, there'll be no need for me, and so I better shoot this down, even though it could be a great idea and you know, draw money." Like, there's none of that going on. So, ultimately, things get tossed around, and like I say, if it comes to me for input, which sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't, I just look at it, and from the point of view, is this gonna draw money? And if I think it does, then I'll say what I think it will. And if it doesn't, I'll say what I think, you know, or what I think we need to do to make a change, you know. And I'm not the only – there's a very unique team assembled in that respect. But I also know that when the time this is one thing I've always taken pride in my career, is that I was always taught by the guys who mentored me, like Kevin Nash, you know, and guys like that, that, hey, state your piece, you know, state your opinion, fight your battles when you want to, but ultimately, once the decision is made, you go out and you do the and you do whatever it is, whether you agree with it or not. And I've always, always done that. And, you know, it's unfortunate that sometimes those elements of personalities are sometimes frowned upon now in wrestling, because if you look back through the time periods where the business was most successful, or even individuals who were the most successful, that's exactly how they approached it. They said, I really believe this is the best way to do it, because who's spending more time thinking about my character than me? You know, so there were times where I would fight a battle and say, like, I really think if we do it this way, you know, this will draw more money in the long run, or this will it'll get us where we want to be. Sometimes they went with it, and sometimes they went, no, we want to do it this way. I go, okay, and I go out and nail it, you know? Like, and that's all there is to it. But they appreciate that, which is why, you know, we're all comfortable in that role, and anyone listening to this or anyone who comes on board should be confident in the fact that any time that any talent is asked for their input, they're certainly not making a decision. It's just input, and then, oh, you know, we've got us, which is a lot more than can be said for a lot of other places, you know. So that's a refreshing thing, and it's the right way to do business.
What are some of the ideas that you've had for your character that were not necessarily embraced?
Well, so far, what you've seen from me is the idea that, look, who I am and what I present, like behind the scenes, you know, is as compelling and as polarizing as, you know, as anything that they've told me to do. And I have a very unique sort of history and perspective on life, and because I've lived in the U.S. since 2010, so and obviously married to a country girl from Virginia, their own story, Korea. You know what I mean? Like there's all these different elements that weave this, you know, tapestry of your personality. And I have other interests and all these other things. And when you get to delve into those things and say, like, this is why I speak the way I speak. This is why I think the way I think. This is why I eat the way I eat. Like, no one else, like, you know that you're presenting something completely unique. And when you're presenting completely unique with 100% conviction, people have no choice but to be compelled by it. And I think that's what we're going to look to get from every single guy we have.
Mickey, of course, tweeted you a congratulations. One would expect that from your wife. But what is life like with her, with such a grueling schedule, and you guys have a baby together, and how does that impact your personal lives?
You know, as much as it impacts anybody else's personal life, who's, you know, whose partner is in WWE, I suppose, you know, obviously the difference being perhaps that I'm a little bit more familiar with some of the things that she has to go through. And in a practical sense, I can provide, like, a good sounding board for her, you know, as far as if she, like, she travels with Alicia Fox most of the time, and, you know, we'll end up having long sort of conversations. I'll end up talking to both of them, you know, and just letting them bounce things off of a neutral person, you know, because I'm not there and I'm not intertwined with all the politics and everything else. So it's like I can perspective, but also with some credibility of my own, you know, level of experience. And as you know, the schedule is regular. Obviously it can be grueling at times, and that just, you know, that just is what it is. But at the same time, we look at it, it's just business. Like when this came along, you know, they were very good to her as far as being understanding of, you know, the fact that we have a young son, and they always told her from day one, look, if we're working you too much, just say so and we'll back it off. And I've always just I told her from the beginning, like, go make that money. Like, we can, we were blessed, able to make a pretty good amount of money from my TNA run. And obviously, you know, she had a decent run of her own in TNA and then WWE prior to that. So between us, you know, we had some finances and we were able to set some things up for ourselves. And I said, but ultimately, you know, you gotta be like, we're young, you know what I mean? There's a long way to go on this road. So I said, look, this is the opportunity right now. You gotta take it and let's just squeeze it for everything it's got. And we'll figure it out, you know, and that's just what adults do, in my opinion, you know, like, and obviously I'm gone sometimes, and that's one of the reasons why we came back to Virginia, because we needed a bit more support in terms of childcare, and we obviously have her family and stuff around, and sometimes if I'm overseas, Dee will come with me, and, you know, it's an adventure. Like, this kid's got more air miles than some adults I know, you know, he's well-traveled already, but, like, we make it work, and one of the things that's great about the NWA is so much more of our content is focused on non-wrestling, is over sort of the build and anticipation and the real-life characters, but more content on our own time, you know, which is great, obviously. But look, we have our issues sometimes as far as being apart, and sometimes it sucks because it's like, oh, just as you're getting in, I'm going out. We're not going to see each other for like 10 days, maybe, you know, but you make it work. Like, she's got a contract, and so at some point that contract will end and things will change, you know, and we had no idea that the circumstances would present themselves the way they did. You know, Triple H called her about the NXT opportunity, and she nailed it. You know, I actually helped shoot and produce the promo she did for that, you know, which was fun for me. So we looked, and then it was like, you got such a great reaction. She tore the house down with Asuka in Toronto, and I was like, it'd be foolish not to, you know, have you back permanently. And then they did, you know, and I said, take it. Let's, you know, do it. Like, we got a long way to go here. Like, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for me and for us. So do this now, and we'll work it out. Like, that's what a marriage is about.
It is very heartwarming to hear such a supportive husband, a supportive partner, because, you know, this is an industry that can take a toll and often does on relationships. So it probably is helpful that both of you are in the industry and recognize the hardships that go along with it and embrace it and support each other.
Yeah, look, I'm not perfect by any means. You know what I mean? Like, we all have our moments. But ultimately, really, when you look at it in the short period of time, and she's not there, or when I go, like, God, we never have a weekend together because we're normally both working. And then when we're home during the week, a lot of the time it's just dedicated to Donovan or just kind of doing all the things that need to be done before heading out again. You know, there are times where we have to go, all right, we need a day for us, or we need to do this. But again, you know, she's living a dream. You know, like, this is what we knew what we were getting into going in. Like, it wasn't like I thought she was retiring, you know, when we got together and when we got married. It was just like, so we've been prepared for it for a long time, and it's just when it comes, just suck it up and get on with it.
Well, Nick, I appreciate you taking this interview has extended well beyond the time slot I asked for, and I appreciate that. I'm very excited by the kind of compelling storytelling that's being done by NWA. I'm looking forward to seeing where it continues to go, and I hope in the future we'll have the opportunity to check back with you so that you can say, I told you so, when some of the great things that you predicted take place and we as an audience are allowed to see those.
Great. Well, I hope so too. And, you know, in the meantime, I just encourage everyone to check out the 10 Pounds of Gold and check out the YouTube stuff with fresh eyes and with, you know, with no agenda, and, you know, get on board, because it's only going to grow from here.
Yeah, I think that it's actually, as I said, very compelling content, and it's a great and refreshing way to be introduced to people in the wrestling industry and to see new stories told in a way that we don't get to see elsewhere. And so for that, I give NWA serious praise, and I look for exciting things to come.
Well, I appreciate it, and I'm sure I speak for everyone at the NWA when I say that, so thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day, and we will talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was newly crowned NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis. As he referenced multiple times, you probably remember him as Magnus during his run, multiple runs, actually, in Impact Wrestling and TNA, where he is a former World Heavyweight Champion. He also held the Global Force World Heavyweight Champion during the recent invasion of GWF into Impact Wrestling. You can find him now on the NWA YouTube channel. Look them up online. Follow Nick at Real Nick Aldis. That's A-L-D-I-S. Real Nick Aldis on Twitter. I am Poyo Del Mar. You are listening to Arms Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. And we will be back in just a moment. Remember to never miss an exciting episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, including exclusive interviews with your favorite professional wrestlers. Follow the podcast on social media. Find us on Twitter at ADT with PDM or like us on Facebook, also ADT with PDM. And follow our hostess, Poyo Del Mar, at The Glamazon PDM. The Glamazon PDM. It's Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. All right, everybody, we are back to wrap up this episode of Arm Drag Takedown. I am Poyo Del Mar, and I would like to let you know some exciting news. I can't give specific dates for any of these interviews that I'm about to tell you about, but I am very excited to let you know that in the coming weeks, I've already gotten verbal agreements from Ethan Carter III. He is a two-time Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, as well as the reigning Impact Grand Champion. So he is going to be on talking about Impact Wrestling and what the future holds. And in addition to that, I've received a verbal confirmation from former NWA World Heavyweight Champion Colt Cabana. He is a sweetheart of the internet, and I have to admit that I kind of fell in love with him a little bit after his recent performance at an All-Pro Wrestling Super Show here in the San Francisco Bay Area, held at the Cal Palace, the iconic Cal Palace. So he is going to be on as well, talking about what the future holds. In addition, I'm looking to get Universal Heavyweight Champion of All-Pro Wrestling, Jeff Cobb. We heard Jeff Cobb being talked very highly of by Nick Aldis earlier in this episode, and I would love to get Jeff on to talk about his career in professional wrestling, as well as his work with Lucha Underground. You may know him as the Monster Matanza Cueto in Lucha Underground. I've also got my feelers out there to bring on third-generation superstar Tessa Blanchard. And she told me something a while back that didn't make any sense to me, but just now, as I was saying it, it came to me. When I first requested an interview with her, she told me that until the tournament is over, she's not allowed to talk to any podcasts or do any interviews. And I thought to myself, what the hell tournament is she talking about? And it just came to me. Remember that it was mentioned earlier in this show that Women of Honor is going to be holding a 16 women tournament to crown a new Ring of Honor women's champion? Well, my guess is that Tessa Blanchard is going to be one of the 16 combatants in that tournament. Tessa didn't say that to me at all. She just declined an interview until January, but I put it all together. Something to think about. So, in other words, we've got upcoming interviews with EC3, Colt Cabana, Jeff Cobb, and unless I just ruined everything by putting two and two together, Tessa Blanchard is going to be on with us. All of that and much more on future episodes of Arm Drag Takedown. If that's not enough reason to find us and follow us on social media at ADT with PDM, then I don't know what the hell to tell you. Until next time, I'm Poyo Del Mar, and like this episode, you can stick a fork in me, honey, because I am done.